Welcome to The Blurg. This episode is dedicated to my now former app, Linkbubble. Now, I would guess most people listening to this podcast are well aware of Linkbubble, but for those who aren't, here's a quick 20-second overview of it so you have a sense of what we're talking about throughout this episode. Linkbubble is an app of my design that released in March 2014. It's an Android browser that intercepts links you click in third-party apps like Twitter and Facebook, and instead of hijacking the entire screen on your phone or tablet, Linkbubble spawns a little bubble on the edge of the screen and loads that link in the background, allowing you to keep reading your Twitter feed instead of watching a web page load. So about 18 months after releasing Linkbubble, I sold it to a US-based startup. In this podcast, we're going to cover everything about Linkbubble during its time under my control, from conception right up until the sale. Before we dig in, though, I should mention that Linkbubble's new owners are still in stealth mode, so I can't and won't say anything about them, as it's simply not my place to do so. But as I said in my post announcing the sale, which I'll link to in the show notes, I'm very excited by the new owners, so I'll just leave it at that and allow them to reveal themselves and their plans for Linkbubble going forward on their own schedule. My guest for this discussion is the incomparable Jake Wharton. Now, if you've ever used an Android app, I feel very confident saying that a portion of that app's code can be traced back to an open source library that Jake has had a hand in. A very long discussion could be had about Jake's open source efforts, and both the excellent Fragmented and Android Developers Backstage podcasts have had such very podcasts with Jake, so if you're interested in that, search those out and give them a listen. But in this episode, Jake is not, in fact, the interview subject, but instead the interviewer, as Jake, who, unsurprisingly, given his hyper-intelligence, is also a long-time Linkbubble user. And he was the first person that came to mind when I thought about who to have this chat with. One final note before we get started. We're now up to 12 episodes of this podcast, and I'd like to thank everyone who's listened and got in touch via social media to provide feedback on the episodes so far. I'd especially like to thank anyone who has shared this podcast with their family, friends, or anyone they think might find it interesting. As you might expect, creating this podcast takes a meaningful amount of time, and given I've not made any attempts to put ads or anything like that here, I would be immensely grateful if you would see fit to help me out by sharing the podcast and helping me grow it to be as big as it can possibly be, so that I can hopefully keep making a bunch more of them. And if you want to install Action Launcher 3 via the Play Store and, you know, buy the upgrade and maybe even leave me a review in unrelated news, my favorite number is 5, I'd be very grateful for that also. Okay, so thanks for listening there. Now it's time for me to hand the hosting duties over to Jake as we dive into the history of Linkbubble. Jake, thanks for coming on, and let's turn it over to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. So, as a longtime Linkbubble user, and hopefully as a lot of our listeners here on, you know, my podcast, I think we would like to know just how the app got started. What was the thing that really catalyzed your need to create something like this?
I think it was the culmination of a couple of things, but the single biggest one that I would point to is my absolute disdain for t.co links on Twitter. Because obviously I wrote Tweet Lanes, but then I switched to the Twitter app for a while because for the same reason that I often spend time using a Samsung phone or an HTC phone or something. Even though I prefer a Nexus, I like to spend time using a device that, you know, the vast majority of the audience is using. And so I applied that to using the official Twitter client, and it just drove me absolutely nuts. Anytime you'd click a link on Twitter, it would just sit waiting for the t.co links to resolve. And then sometimes when that happened, it would then go to Bitly, and you could have like 4, 5, 6, 7 different redirects before you actually get to the web page, and then it starts to load. And so it largely was born out of my frustration with that, combined with, I think one important skill to have is not only just to recognize things that are annoying, which in this case was the t.co links, but then to actually go, okay, well, is there something that could be done to fix that? And invariably, in this case, with Android's flexible APIs, there was. I started thinking, well, hang on, you know, I could intercept those links, and from there, what could I do with it? And it just largely grew from there. And also the frustration of Instagram links not being embedded was another sort of catalyst there. But yeah, that's where the seed came from.
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone that uses Twitter more than as just a casual user has probably experienced this. And either you kind of suck it up and you do the Android version of alt tabbing back and forth as you like create these tabs, or now they have an embedded web view, which is almost even worse because then you can't kind of queue these things up. It's just like that, and the Tico redirects is just, it compounds into this horrible situation.
Yeah, and if I could embellish on the Instagram one, with the Instagram links, with them not being embedded, you click the link, so I'd loaded Chrome to resolve the t.co link, and then Chrome only displayed for a fraction of a second, and then it redirected to the Instagram app. And it's right. Just the most clunky, horrible, horrible experience, and it just really started to grate on me, and as I said, I just started to think, well, hang on, what could be done to work around that? So that's where the seed came from there.
Yeah, that actually sounds like a recurring theme almost in everything that you do. If you think of how TweetLanes got started, how Action Launcher got started, it's really like a need that you had. And rather than just kind of suck it up or finding something else to fill that, you know, void or that lack of feature, you kind of take it upon yourself to go and build these tools, which is something that a lot of people don't do. But yeah, especially with Android, you can create these really, really engaging and awesome experiences. So
yeah, well, I think that's the thing that appeals so much to me about Android development, is that you're not constrained nearly as much with APIs as you are on other platforms. You can, you know, there was nothing special about TweetLanes. TweetLanes could absolutely had been done on iOS. It's just a Twitter client at the end of the day. But Action Launcher is a unique app that was, again, born out of my frustration with the stock Android launcher. And yeah, you're able to take, replace the default app on Android, and so that gives a lot of flexibility, and yeah, so that's where I've been fortunate enough to find a bit of a niche. So yeah,
so even when you think about like TweetLanes and Action Launcher, even though the latter is a launcher, which is something that can be thought of as like really complex, when it comes down to it, it's just really an app and you're setting which one's the default. But for Link Bubble, the integration into the system is a lot deeper, and it uses like parts of the APIs which are not really well exercised or well documented. So when you had this idea and you kind of knew how you wanted to attack it, how did you get started? What was the initial foray into doing this? Was there a prototype, or did you jump right in, or was it research based, or what?
I definitely wrote a prototype, and it's I should clarify that the first prototype that I wrote was before Chatheads came out. So it wasn't a light bulb where I saw Chatheads and went, hang on, I could sort of do this for the web. It was a very crude prototype that I wrote of the, you know, a shoddy looking loading indicator in the middle on the right hand screen, and then the web view slid on. And so yeah, that was the first sort of crude prototype I wrote. As far as where I tracked down the information for that, I'm stretching my brain a bit, but it was combined also with the time that, at the same time that I was doing Action Launcher 2.0's new feature, headline feature, which was OneSwipe. And what OneSwipe was it allowed you to swipe the Quick Draw or the new Quick Page feature on screen from any app. So I was, I think I'd prototyped the first version of the Quick Page, and then I went, hang on, this is really eating me up inside. I'm going to take a few days and see if I can prototype it. And I think I wrote it again from memory, but none of that code actually made it into the final Link Bubble releases. We'll get into a bit later, but Yeah, so I don't quite remember offhand. There was a couple of little prototypes, but all of them seemed to only work in the on Gingerbread, and I think Google changed those APIs around Ice Cream Sandwich. But that was about 2 years ago, so it's a little hazy, the exact details there. But certainly you're right that there wasn't you know, a wealth of examples and that sort of stuff out there.
Yeah, we're seeing it a lot more nowadays and in a few apps, but it's definitely not the norm. So you mentioned that this was happening during Action Launcher 2 development. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that stood out to me when you were talking to Jesse about Action Launcher was that you said that Link Bubble as a whole was a lot bigger effort than not only Action Launcher 3.5, the most recent release, but Action Launcher 2, which itself was probably the most significant release. So how long did it take to go from that prototype stage up through something that you felt comfortable with releasing to the masses?
Well, the prototype, as far as the timeline, like I did the prototype and I only spent, I'd guess around 3 days, something like that on it. And it was enough to show that, yes, this concept is going to work. And most importantly, Android's WebView, which is what's used to render the web, that is going to render in a background service. And this is a viable app concept. I can do this. So I proved that out. But I didn't have time to take it further because I was right in the middle of gearing up for Action Launcher 2.0's release at the time. And that was my, that had to be my focus. And my hope was that I'd be able to release Action Launcher 2. And I had this plan. I was going to release it at half price and try and get in the top paid apps in the store. And my hope was that, you know, it would organically become sticky at the top of that top paid apps chart in the apps chart in the Play Store. So I just had to focus all my efforts on Action Launcher 2. So I sort of went away, and I think I didn't touch it again for probably 3 or 4 months, something like that. And Action Launcher 2 was taking up all of my time, but Link Bubble was really starting to become more and more prevalent in my thoughts, and it was just very clear that this was more than a niche and something I had to do. And so what I ended up doing was I got a buddy of mine who I basically enlisted a buddy of mine and showed him the prototype and showed him the document detailing exactly how it was all going to work and all that stuff. And I just said, look, I've got my head down doing Action Launcher 2. What I would love for you to do is a very standalone task. Can you just get the interaction physics working? Get the flicking, have the view slide on correctly and all that sort of stuff. If you can just get that going for me, and so that way I can focus on doing what I had to do for Action Launcher 2. And it was also, I just felt like it would be a good thing to have someone else help me get some momentum on it so that it was easier for me to come in and, you know, essentially finish it off, which was a fool's hope, because by the time I actually went on Action Launcher, which I think was around December 2013, around the middle of it, I remember one day at the time I was, Action Launcher 2 had gone out, and I was really trying to make a conscious effort to reply to every support email, and I was in Zendesk, and I just replied to these emails, a bunch of emails, and I just went, hang on, look, I need to spend this time trying to get Link Bubble going. And I just hit pause on Action Launcher 2 for a few months there just to finish Link Bubble. And I think once, I was on it full time, and my buddy Glenn was on it for, he was on it during that time as well. It was mostly after hours, but he still put in a good amount of effort for it for sure. And we released it in March 2014. So it's tough to accurately say, but certainly for me, it was about, 3 to 4 months of full-time work. And that was pretty full-on work as well. Like, a lot of really, late nights, which I tend not to do too much. But and weekends and it had just come from, after Action Launcher 2, which was a massive, massive release. So I'd already been crunching, and then I just went into another 3-month-long crunch, which was not particularly great for my health or particularly fun. But that's how that came to be.
So one of the things that stands out most to me about when it actually launched, you had this period where you were kind of teasing it on Twitter, and no one really knew what it was. I think you showed a couple screenshots, and you still really couldn't figure out what it was. And then you had a concrete date when it was going to be out. And then all of a sudden there was this really big shift where it wasn't going to happen. And no one really knew why. And eventually, a couple of days later, you had mentioned something about speaking to lawyers. And then, a couple more days went past. It was like a week or something. And it just did launch. And we really never heard anything about that incident, or at least unless someone, had talked to you directly. So can you kind of explain what coming up into the launch was like, and what actually happened there?
Yeah, sure. So that was, the launch period was actually, it was interesting for a lot of reasons. There are a lot of positives, but there were a few negatives also. And I should mention that I don't think it's good enough to just have an app. You need to have a plan for how to release it. And what my plan to do with LinkBubble was I was going to do this giant trolling YouTube video where I was going to say, okay, I think it sucks when you click on an Instagram link and it loads Chrome and then Instagram. I think it sucks when you go on t.co, and I probably wouldn't have said sucks, but and I was just going to say, okay, these are a bunch of things that are bad about the browsing experience on mobile currently. And then I was going to go, and this is what I plan to do with it. And then I was just going to do the television static and just go beep for, a minute and a half and that sort of stuff, and just troll people. And then I was going to release it the next day. But then it was just another thing. It was going to take me days to actually do that video. And so I just thought, I don't have that time. I'm just going to. So basically, I did much of that in a post. Where I just pointed out a bunch of things that I think are bad about the mobile browsing experience. And I put this post out and it got massively shared and certainly on Google Plus and retweeted. And so the line in the sand, it was very clear. I just said, okay, these are the things that I dislike about mobile browsing. And tomorrow I'm going to show you how I personally think is a better way of it working. And so I was all set. The app was, the final APK was up in the Play Store. I was all set. And I just casually texted, sent a Hangouts message to a buddy of mine and just showed him the promo video and that sort of stuff. And he just said, you should really look at patenting that. And I hadn't really thought about it, to that point, but I thought, I guess I should ask my lawyer. And so I just got in touch with my lawyer, and then he put me onto a patent lawyer, and the patent lawyer, unsurprisingly, I guess, came back and said, yes, you should certainly consider this. But if you release this publicly, then you can no longer apply for a patent in certain regions. I forget the exact details. I think maybe I could have applied for it in Australia even after releasing it, but not in the States. So that would have, negated a whole heap of the benefit of the patent if it wasn't potentially enforceable in the United States. So it was just gut wrenching. I just, felt like I'd been, been winded, because I knew I'd made such a giant massive song and dance about the fact that this app was releasing tomorrow, and suddenly I couldn't. And it was a very, very tough decision. But I'd also add that I hadn't slept for weeks leading up to it, because I was just so excited. I just really felt like LinkBubble was onto something, and I was just so excited to see what people said about it. And I'd given it to a few people to play around with before it was ready, and it in the week leading up to its release, and they were all really excited about it. And so, yeah, I just wanted to get this thing out there. And yeah, when I got that email from the patent lawyer saying I can't release it, I've got to make sure the patent application's in before we do it, I was just like, it was not a fun time. But so that's the reason. It was, I mean, if I had my time again, I just would have applied for the patent earlier. But look, it was the right call, as hard as it was at the time.
Yeah, that stuff's definitely hard looking back on it. But so ultimately, you ended up deciding to go ahead with applying for the patent after going through that, consulting with your lawyer and with the patent lawyer. So, you know, the patent space in software is somewhat of a controversial topic, especially internationally. So was there any hesitation or concern of moving forward in there such that, you know, it might ultimately end up having effects later on down the road?
Yeah, it was absolutely a strong consideration. And as I mentioned, it was not something I had a lot of time to consider because the decision to... from when, hey, you should think about patenting, that was raised to me, to when I actually started the application process was, you know, less than an afternoon. So I didn't have much time to think about it. And yeah, I absolutely was hesitant about it. And I didn't know if this was something that I ultimately wanted, you know, to do. But at the end of the day, I just felt like it would be the right move long term for, you know, I didn't feel, let me say that another way. I didn't feel like if I had a patent eventually granted for LinkBubble, that would be a bad move asset wise. I just felt like that would potentially strengthen, LinkBubble as an asset. And I firmly believed in the idea. Like it would have, I just felt like, yeah, it could grow and become something that could be in hundreds of millions of browsers. So going forward, so why not potentially do that? It's, as I said, I mean, it was a big decision, especially because it's not cheap. Like it cost a bunch of money to do. And then that was just Australia. And then to roll it out internationally, it cost a bunch of money again. So yeah, it was a strong decision, a strong consideration. But I think ultimately, you know, it was the right one.
So the app ended up being released. And I think in general, a lot of people really immediately saw the value proposition and were attracted to, you know, the features and this functionality that this provided. But, there was certainly not without some skepticism of certain aspects of the launch. I think the most notable one was, the price that it was set at.
Yes.
So, notorious Android users historically have wanted things for often cheaper than they're probably actually valued. And I don't think it would have been crazy for you to want to charge, you know, $1, $2, $3, but it launched at $4.99. So can you kind of explain what the reasoning behind that was and the reaction around that?
Yeah, so basically, Action Launcher was selling for $3.99, and that was at the time, and that was a price that I didn't pick. I just looked at surveyed the landscape at the time, and that was the generally accepted price. And so I just, you know, put that as the price and didn't sort of think much to it. And then when it came time to set LinkBubble's price, I just felt like this app. I feel like I could make a case, at least for my usage, that I got more benefit out of this one single app than I did Android 4.3, you know, an entire operating system release or something like that. And so for me, I just looked at it saying, you know, I think this is worth $5. Like this literally saves me, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 seconds every time I click a link. And I'm clicking more links because of it. I'm, you know, getting more out of Twitter because of it. I just feel like it's worth $5. And so that was basically as much thought that as went into it. And, you know, I mentioned in, I think it was the podcast with Jesse, or maybe it was the one, the Push Bullet ones with Ryan Oldenburg, but how launch days can be good and bad and some, you know, bittersweet. And definitely with Link Bubble's launch, there was just so much pushback. I don't even know whether it's fair to label it as so much. There was a lot of vocal pushback, but I think overall, there were far, far, far more people that just bought it and said, yep, this is terrific. I absolutely am happy to pay this. But I think because the fact that Link Bubble's launch attracted so much attention, the number of, people that were, it had more eyes on it. And then, even if you only have 1% of people that complain about it, when you have more eyes, that 1% is a larger sample size. And so, there was a big referendum about the, a lot of people saying, oh, this isn't worth that. Maybe it's worth $3 or something like that. And which always strikes me as odd. I don't know how someone, can make that that case. But look, I think the concept of app pricing is absolutely a subject for a dedicated podcast episode. But it wasn't fun dealing with the negativity of that. But I wrote a sort of honest post in response to it and got a lot of good comments. A lot of people seem to understand that, and it is what it is, and I don't really regret it. I continue to feel like the app is worth that. I think mobile apps are by and large very underpriced, so I didn't feel like I was stealing from anyone or doing anything untoward with that price.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think one of the best features of Link Bubble to justify the price is it actually, so you mentioned that it saves you 7 to 10 seconds. It actually keeps count of how many bubbles you open and the total aggregate of how many hours it has saved you. And so I hopped in real quick before we got on here, and I've only had my Nexus 6 for, since IO. So, 2 months,
couple of months,
and it's already saved me 10 hours.
10 hours, yeah. And so, look at that.
If that's not worth $5, what is?
No, that's right. And you've obviously been using Link Bubble for a year or more before then. Like, how can you look back and not think that has been worthwhile? So, yeah, I had no qualms whatsoever that I felt like it was a fair price. Everyone's, I guess, entitled to their opinion. And if they don't like it, they, can opt not to buy it, I guess.
So, on the whole, would you consider that the app launch was a success, or were there any regrets?
Yes.
Around?
Ideally, I would have done the patent stuff earlier, but that's definitely a byproduct, I think, of my largely sort of being a one-person studio. I just didn't have any experience in this space. It didn't even occur to me. But yeah, look, the launch went well. Like, there was some tremendous comments. Like time.com ran a nice article about it. The next web, I think, had a great article where they called it I think it was something like, I'm tempted to call this a revelation, which I felt was was really nice. It was terrific to hear. I had a bunch of Googlers who I really respect get in touch and say they loved it. Like Vic Gundotra, who was head of Google's mobile unit before he did Google Plus, he said he was really impressed with it. Dave Singleton, who's done the Android Wear spots at Google I/O the last couple of years, he wrote a really nice glowing post about it. So yeah, I was tremendously excited by that, and the app was received really well and sold well at that point as well. So I was really quite happy after the launch period, for sure, if quite a bit tired.
So let's start talking about things after the launch.
Sure.
I remember you came to San Francisco, and you actually came to the Square office, and one of the things that came up was the fact, and I think this was a recurring theme that people found in using Link Bubble, was the fact that the web view experience was so dramatically different than Chrome.
Yeah.
So yes, we had improved kind of the experience of getting to the website, but we had regressed in the fact that now we're in basically a browser from 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that, you know, we had brought up was that, you know, we know that Chromium can be built, could have been built at the time. And there was also, Firefox was also open source. And so had you ever considered moving away from WebView, even though it's something that potentially, would have required just a ton of extra work for what some could argue is, only a tiny bit of gain?
Well, I would definitely have been in the camp, certainly at the time, because this was, by the time Link Bubble was out, KitKat had been out for a few months, but I don't think it had any meaningful penetration at that point. So, and KitKat was the first release where Google meaningfully actually updated WebView to a more recent version of Chromium. It was still quite old, but it was a lot better than the whatever it was, 3 year version that that shipped with Jelly, 3 year old version that shipped with Jelly Bean. But so yes, absolutely, and I was very much aware of the sort of limitations with Link Bubble. And the biggest one was HTML select elements or drop down items. The Chromium code just has it just has code in there that just assumes that the app is running in an activity, which is, you know, for the sort of layman's listening, that's just most apps on Android run in an activity. That's just a full screen app, basically. Whereas Link Bubble, the way it works is it runs in a service, which is something that runs in the background. And basically, WebView itself was assuming that it was always going to be running in an activity. And when you tried to use a drop-down element, it just went, okay, I'm an activity, I'm going to do this, and it crashed. And it crashed so hard, I couldn't catch it, I couldn't prevent it. There was seemingly nothing that I could do around that. And I just felt like that was such a big issue that really annoyed me. And I didn't like the fact that the vast majority of my audience at the time was on Jelly Bean, and they were using this really stale version of WebView. So I absolutely had spent time looking at alternatives. Firefox, they did do some effort at the time to separate out Gecko View, which they call, from the Chrome that wraps Firefox, but I don't think that initiative ever really took off, and there were a bunch of bugs that were filed that needed to be fixed before that was going to work in a service. And I got in touch with a Mozilla engineer who was really, you know, helpful and talked me through it and that sort of stuff, but you know, Mozilla have got a bunch of different priorities, and it just wasn't high on their priority list to sort that. So Firefox was kind of ruled out, and then there was Chromium, which I thought would be the best option. And I spent a week or more looking at that, but man, that was that was not an enjoyable week, I can tell you. I think part of it was compounded by the fact that I'd never, and to this day, that's my only real experience with Linux, because I used Windows when I was making games, and then switched over to Mac, and I hadn't spent any time with Linux. So even just getting my MacBook to a point where it was running Ubuntu with all the right versions and connecting to a network, that took me a couple of days. And then I got Chromium going, but Chromium was just not set up where you could just run a script and then you'd end up with a library that you could just then link with your Android app and suddenly load the web. I remember at I/O, I explained this to, I mentioned this to a couple of Google engineers, and I said, you know, I've got this problem with WebView. It's assuming that it's running in an activity and it's actually running in a service. And I started looking at building Chromium, and I just remember one Googler who would really know what he's on about with this stuff just kind of literally rocked back a bit and gave me this giant wince look and just went, ooh, and I just went, yeah, it is just, it is painful. I have, I guess you could say I have a lot of respect for people who who want to work in that sort of, with in that code base, but I am absolutely not one of them. So, that was kind of the end of my digging into Chromium. I definitely think you could go that route, but it would take a lot of resources. And as I've sort of mentioned throughout this podcast, I'm always conscious of the fact that I only have so many resources, and there's only so far I can stretch myself. And as I said, Chromium's definitely not set up so you can just run a script and get a lib. And so there's going to be time working through that. At the time, from memory, I was holding out the slightest bit of hope that maybe Google would do something with Google Play Services. Maybe they'd add a playservices.chrome view or something, so that apps could embed the latest version of Chromium in their apps, the way they can, you know, embed a map, or the way there's a YouTube player API, so that any app can play a YouTube video. There was a part of me that was hoping out for that. I also had tickets in with the in the Android bug tracker, where I was hoping that they would fix WebView in the next version of Android. But so with all that, it just, and you combine the fact that if I had got Chromium going, it would have meant a lot more overhead as far as managing different versions of the app, so that you have executables that work on ARM and x86, and whether I would have had to have supported 64-bit with Lollipop. So there was just so many unknowns. I just kind of had to abandon the Chromium pursuit.
So after kind of through the releases of Link Bubble, there were a bunch of smaller features added. You had, I think, OK Google support at one point.
Yeah.
You were adding like a reading mode. There were a bunch of like incremental features, but they were relatively kind of few and far between, just incrementally improving. And then I remembered a point where it seemingly looked like you were scratching another itch. And this companion app, or it could be thought of as a companion app, almost came out of nowhere, called TapPath. And so can you kind of explain what TapPath is, what it does, and how it kind of ties into what Link Bubble was doing?
Yeah, so TapPath is basically, because Link Bubble's always had the functionality where you can click a link and then the bubble loads, and you can flick it up and then quickly add the link to Pocket or add it, you know, share it via Twitter, whatever you want to do. One day it just kind of occurred to me how I could make it work by having, I wouldn't have to modify the code too much to allow double and triple tap functionality. And so I prototyped that in Link Bubble, and it worked, and I thought, okay, I'll do this. But then I kind of started to think about it a bit more, and I thought, hang on, maybe this would be better as a standalone app, so that if, for instance, someone didn't want to use Link Bubble, they could still use this functionality. And I definitely was aware at the time that people would think I was sort of doing a, you know, that was a dodgy, greedy move, that it should have been a part of Link Bubble's functionality. But I did, you know, the fact that it was 99 cents and I did couple it, I did genuinely think that there would be people that might be interested in, so in using it as a standalone app. So that's why I did it. But if I had my time again, you know, well, I guess knowing what I know now, I wouldn't have done it that way. I would have just released the functionality as part of a Link Bubble update, because it, as a standalone app, like, it definitely had TapPath definitely had issues in that, and some of them are just largely a consequence of the fact that it's a giant hack and trying to do things that I don't think Android was particularly trying to do things that Android isn't necessarily well suited to. And a good example of that is the fact that anytime you instantiate an activity, it could trigger a garbage collection, which is an operation where the system goes through and tries to free up memory. And certainly before Lollipop, that that was an operation that could take, you know, 100 milliseconds or more. And that sort of timing, it really, really messed up with being able to accurately measure how long it has been between taps and to recognize subsequent taps. So it just... tap path, I think it's an interesting idea, but it just didn't work well enough. And I think I was so, looking back, I think I was so excited that, oh, this is awesome. Like I can have this, I can think about this driving to lunch and I could look and I'm able to release it and have people using it the next week. And I think I should have taken more time on tap path and sort of, thought about it. And there's a line in Jurassic Park that I really like, saying, you know, you were so preoccupied with whether or not you could, you didn't stop to think if you should. And I think if I'd stopped a bit more with tap path, then I probably would have just released it as a link bubble feature.
Yeah, I'm always sad because I ended up disabling tap path and just sticking with link bubble. But whenever I get a new phone, Google Play insists on, you know, restoring all my apps, and Tap Path is always one of them. And I never go in and enable it, but I also never go in and uninstall it either. It's definitely more like a cool technical demo that, yeah, you pretty much mentioned that there were just a couple of things where it got hung up in practice and didn't actually end up working.
Yeah, I think that's the crux of it. Like, it's... with something as critical as input like that, like it has to work 100% of the time, or at least 99.5 times out of 100. Like it's just not good enough to work 8 times out of 10. And a lot of other phones had issues that it worked a lot better on Nexus devices in my experience than other phones, and so that compounded it. And yeah, I mean it's, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I guess you sort of learn along the way. And there was a part of me that also wanted to scratch the itch and see, okay, what's it like to release an app for 99 cents? Does that lower price necessarily equate to a bunch more sales? So, you know, I learned a bit doing it and that sort of stuff. But when I look back on you know, what I've done in the last few years, I certainly wouldn't have TapPath being at the top of the list of things I'm most proud of.
So TapPath put you into, I think, a 4-app category, because I think at that time, TweetLanes, I think a lot of people kind of knew that it wasn't really going to be a thing anymore, but it was still out there.
It still gets installs today, to be honest.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, certainly I don't. And occasionally I'll get a support request saying something like, oh, TweetLanes has just suddenly started chewing up 18% of my battery or something like that. And I'm going, I don't know what to say about that. I can assure you it is not related to a new feature that was added, but I digress.
Yeah, so with, with TapPath going to 4 apps, even though some of them were being updated a bit more frequently than others, did that become a challenge? And kind of how did you balance where you spent your time and which you focused on?
That's definitely a challenge, and one that certainly persisted for up until very recently when Link Bubble was sold. But I mean, I would say with TapPath, like I never had any intention of it being an app that would grow and grow and grow. It felt very self-contained, and this is what it does. And I didn't anticipate then having to spend, 6 months growing it. And whereas I did have Link Bubble and I had Action Launcher. So they were my sort of main focuses, areas of focus. But I think it was, I did do one Action Launcher update not that long after Link Bubble launched, where I added basic unread count functionality, which is another topic of discussion and not a feature that I like on Android, because it just flat out doesn't work reliably. But so I was doing an okay job balancing between Link Bubble and Action Launcher, but I don't know, it's always a tough call. I think it's very hard to work on multiple apps at a time.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely sympathize there, although I work on libraries instead of apps, but how to juggle is one of the hardest things.
Yeah, it definitely is. Well, you absolutely could speak to that as well.
So one of the things that I remember from you speaking to Jesse, or another thing, I guess, is that you have like an internal, like a developer only version, which has a bunch of features that either are not ready for release or are just things that you're kind of keeping in your pocket. And so over the course of Link Bubble, did you have features like that, or were there any features that we never released, that never saw the light of day for any reason?
I don't think so. I think I've certainly got a couple in the bank for Action Launcher, but with Link Bubble, I think I released everything that I worked on.
With Link Bubble kind of falling into with Action Launcher picking up a lot of steam with the 3 release, we ended up seeing Link Bubble kind of fall into stagnation. Not that it really needed a lot of attention, but it was pretty obvious that a lot wasn't happening, at least in the terms of releases. But you kind of, you know, spoiler alerted already the ending of the story where it ended up being sold. So can you talk about how that initially came to be, like how you were approached and up through kind of the ultimate sale?
Sure. Well, before we get into that, I think it's worth mentioning the period where Link Bubble definitely didn't receive a bunch of updates, and going into explaining a bit what happened there. So, Link Bubble went out of the gate and did really well, you know, but it definitely didn't reach the sales level, settle at the everyday sales level that I hoped it would. My, you know, entirely ambitious hope was that it would end up being something like Tasker or something like that, which is an Android exclusive app that seems permanently fixed at the top of the paid app charts. And, that didn't happen, and it definitely, you know, it dropped to levels that I didn't anticipate. And I think when we, you and I and Jesse Wilson was also there at DroidCon New York last year, and I remember we were walking up Broadway, I think it was, and Jesse just said, okay, so you've got this app, and how do you, like, it's a great app, Link Bubble, but how do you tell people about it? No one's ever going to put in, and I'm paraphrasing a bit, but no one's ever going to plug into Google, I want an app that asynchronously loads links in the background and expands them on screen when they're ready to be viewed. So how do you make people aware of your product? And that was something that, even to this day, I don't feel I've got a tremendous answer for that. It's definitely a very tricky part of it, and definitely that was sort of part of what was why I was, you know, the idea of an acquisition was something that might appeal to me, because I just didn't have an answer for that question on how I was going to grow Link Bubble. And and I also mentioned that there was it was after, I think it was around the, you know, September or something last year, I decided, okay, you know, I've just had enough. There's a few things about Link Bubble that I want to be better. I want the physics to be smoother, and Facebook have got this open source library called Rebound. I want to have a go at putting Rebound in. And so I just took a day and prototyped, okay, let's just see if we can get something bouncing around on the screen using Facebook's Rebound library. And it, you know, the first day's prototype was really good. And then I spent the next day on it, and then all of a sudden I'd spent a week on it. And it was every day the prototype was getting better. And so I was very happy to spend that time. But so that took a week. And then that went on for 2.5 weeks. And then at the end of 2.5 weeks, I was like, okay, I'm you know, really happy with how this is working. I've got all the targets on screen. I've got the view sliding on for the web. But this has taken me 2.5 weeks, and I had hoped that it would take 3 weeks to sort of integrate these new physics and be able to release, you know, a new version of Link Bubble with it. And all I had at the end of it was a bubble shell app, I called it. And so it didn't have any of the functionality to load the links and any of that stuff. And so I sort of got to that point, and then I'm like, well, hang on. Part of the reason for me to do this exercise was to do it right. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to do this right, then this might also be a good time for me to try and teach myself RxJava and integrate that into Link Bubble. And then I'm just thinking, gosh, okay, well, that's going to take a bit of time for me to learn that. And I've still got to bring this other functionality over. And it definitely, the core of the app structure code-wise was very different to what the in the prototype to what it was in Link Bubble. So it wasn't like it was going to be an easy matter of just picking pieces up and moving them into the prototype. There was definitely going to be a lot of shuffling around. And I just looked at I'd spent 3 weeks on that, and I had a lot of time to go. And at the time, I was getting a bunch of daily emails from Crashlytics saying, these are the number of people that have organically discovered your app in the last day. And even the Action Launcher 2, which had largely been untouched for, you know, aside from one pretty major update for the better part of, I don't know, 9-10 months, Action Launcher 2 was getting way more organic installs every day than Link Bubble. And Link Bubble, as I mentioned, it was definitely not, it had dropped off and not doing what I hoped it would revenue-wise. And I just kind of looked at it and just tried to take my heart out of it, if you will, because there was definitely a part of me that's like, you know, my name is on these apps. It's not like in the Play Store. These apps are my resume, and I want Link Bubble to have, you know, terrific physics. I want it to be as good as possible. And so that was part of the reason for me wanting to do it again, to do it better. But I just sort of had to take a step back and think, hang on, look, Action Launcher is getting so much more organic growth. I've got two apps. I need to focus on one right now, and I think it needs to be Action Launcher. So at that point, I just sort of shelved the prototype that I had in place and just focused head down full time on Action Launcher 3. And, you know, got that out before the end of the year. So your question was leading up to Link Bubble's sale. So I've taken a very long way to get there, and I'll take a little bit longer and say that, yeah. And then, so Action Launcher 3 launched, and it did tremendously, you know, better than Link Bubble. And most pleasing for me was that it sustained a really good level, you know, every day. I went through a period where I hadn't updated it for a month or something, but it was still doing tremendous, attracting a tremendous amount of users, and a percentage of them were buying. So it was very clear that of my two apps, Action Launcher was the one that I should be investing the most time in, and as tough a decision as it was, and it was very, very tough. I just had to sort of let Link Bubble sit on the sidelines for a while.
Yeah, and I think it's also the right choice, because there's a lot more potential in growing Action Launcher than there was in Link Bubble, feature-wise, and, you know, engaging with the user. Like, what features would you add to Link Bubble to, you know, make it so much nicer? It's the core value proposition is kind of the only thing it really needs, and there's little things that could be fixed, but other than that, there's not a whole lot of room for it to grow. Whereas with the launcher, there's a whole mess of things that you can integrate with and add to in order to make that a better experience. So yeah, it makes sense that you would choose that one. Okay, so one of the things that's most different about Link Bubble when you look at something like a more traditional browser is that there's really no functionality beyond the core interaction of just viewing a web page. All you have is the ability to, you know, click links around, and then if you need anything more advanced, you kind of have to go to a traditional browser. So can you kind of describe what led you to keep the feature set so simple and not add all these other traditional features that you would find in a full browser?
Sure. So I think the certainly resource constraints had an awful lot to do with it. There's just, you know, Linkbubble itself getting it to the point it was and getting it ready took a lot of effort. And then if you then go to consider adding bookmarks. Google don't have an API for adding bookmarks, which is just so infuriating, but that's another matter. But so if I were to add bookmarks, then I'd have to add, you know, obviously save the bookmarks and add, remove, edit, all that sort of stuff, reorder bookmarks, and instantly people would want them synced across Linkbubble installs. And that's just a very big task. And it, all of that stuff I didn't feel it was needed for what Linkbubble was trying to be, which was the best way to consume links that you clicked on from a social feed. And I started to sort of think of Linkbubble as I started to associate most modern browsers with a Swiss Army knife, where there's so many bits to them. There's obviously bookmarks and search functionality and your history and extensions. You know, you can go on and on with everything that makes up a browser, a modern browser in today's age. And I just felt like there was an opportunity to try and make a sharp knife rather than a Swiss Army knife, and that aligned very well with my my significant resource constraints. So that's why that is.
Okay, so this year at Google I/O, one of the things that was announced was what Google calls custom tabs, which is this concept of using an actual browser, but theming it like your app, and also allowing it to start really quickly and kind of appear as if it's part of your app. Do you have any like opinions on that or comments on that, just in terms of kind of being in a similar space of trying to solve this problem?
Yeah, it was definitely interesting when I think Dave Burke introduced that, and we were sitting in the keynote, and he started saying, you know, There's these issues with browsers where, you know, it takes a long time to load. And there was definitely, I was sitting on the edge of my seat thinking, okay, what are they going to do here? What is this? And yeah, I mean, I think the Chrome custom tabs are very interesting, and I certainly evaluated them quickly, but unfortunately they definitely weren't set up to run in a service. It would have been great if they were, and Linkbubble could have used them, but it was very clear that wasn't the case. And looking at the API, it is quite limited. You basically tell Chrome to warm up that you're probably going to load this web page. There's no API to get back, you know, what percentage of the web page is loaded. Chrome doesn't tell you when it's ready to display the web page or anything like that. And those features are pretty core, I think, to Linkbubble. So there was no obvious way to directly use Chrome custom tabs, but I think it's certainly an interesting play and smart play of Google in that space. And yeah, I mean, I'm certainly for anything that improves the experience of the web on mobile phones.
So let's get into kind of how you were approached about the acquisition.
Sure. So I guess I should mention that I had I eventually sold Linkbubble, but I had a bunch of discussions of various natures about such things with Linkbubble, you know, right from even before Linkbubble was sold. Actually, even before Linkbubble was launched, there was, now I'm not going to name any companies, but there was one company that I just sort of looked at and thought, okay, they're doing, you know, really trying to make a strong play in the mobile space. I know someone, a few people over there, I'm just going to get in touch and just say, look, I've got this, and I did a sort of video for them. I've got this app. What do you think about, you know, you buy it off me, and like I am entirely fine. My pitch was, you know, you take with it, take it and run. And I, you know, you can delete, you know, release this as your own product, put your own brand on it, never mention me or anything. That, you know, if you're okay to do that, and you know, we can come to a deal, then I'm totally fine to do that. So I did that, and the company, you know, we definitely had some discussions and went back and forth for a bit, but their biggest sticking point was something that I would come to learn in basically every other discussion that I had relating to LinkBubble's sale, and that was they wanted me. And I definitely understand that. Like, it's very well, it's often repeated, I guess you could say, that like when venture firms invest in companies, they don't invest in the app or the product service that that company is building. They invest in the entrepreneurs and that have founded the company. They invest because they believe in these people. And a common theme throughout all my discussions was people said, okay, LinkBubble's great. And we could take that and run with it, but we really want you. And that's definitely not something that I am against, but it was, I'm too honest and too forthright for my own good with them, but I just, it's always felt to me like I might as well be as upfront as possible and say, look, the reality is, like, we've got a, you know, my family and I, we're very happy where we are. We like where we live, and my wife's, you know, got not just a job, but a career. And, you know, we got grandparents and family and friends and all that sort of stuff. So we like where we live. And as it stands now, my apps, you know, put us in a reasonable position. So it's not at all out of the realms that I could come and work for you, but, it would have to be, you know, an offer you can't refuse or something like that. If you're just saying, you know, come over, and that means, you know, my wife has to give up her job and that sort of stuff, and we're roughly in the same position, then, like, that's not something that's necessarily hugely appealing to us as a family. So it's for that reason, I was always upfront that it's difficult for me to move. You know, if that's something that you can make work, then great, we'll have a chat about it. But if not, then it's, you know, no, the offer is, you know, take the app, take the code, take the patent application, and do with it what you see fit. But if you want me, then that's going to be a much tougher ask. And so that sort of pre-launch deal sort of didn't happen for that reason. And I had another company get in touch, say, you know, yep, we think this is terrific, and they did offer to sort of give me money for the patent application and do a sort of, you know, I'd still be licensed to use it and that sort of stuff. But I was nervous of doing that because I felt like that was a very strong asset of the company. And I'd also had venture capital offers at the time. And I felt like if I were to do something where I no longer actually owned the patent application and, you know, hopefully at some point patent, then that would, you know, that would limit my options there. So I didn't sort of pursue that too much. And there are other companies as well. There was one company that literally three different people from the company, you know, actually there were multiple that had three different groups, get in touch that, you know, didn't know about the others that we'd discussed. So there were a bunch of different, you know, companies that got in touch about, you know, acquiring LinkBubble and, you know, potentially moving me over and that sort of stuff. But for the reasons I sort of outlined, it just, it never really worked out.
But ultimately, we know someone came along who actually was interested in just the app, right?
Yes. So that's, and that's definitely a part of the reason why it definitely felt different. The group that they ultimately sold it to, cause I was sort of very clear that, I'm happy to enter discussions to do this, but, upfront, like it would be all the assets related. But I'm going to, you know, I've got Action Launcher. I live down in Australia. So, if this is something that is appealing to you, then we can absolutely discuss it. If not, then no hard feelings. And yeah, so, they were on board, and that's definitely, you know, why that transaction happened. So yeah, I was really thrilled with it. as I sort of mentioned at the very top, I can't go into to details because they're sort of not mine to share. But I mean, I guess I don't think I'm under any legal obligation to say anything about LinkBubble going forward. But I'm more than happy to do so because I'm very, very happy with how it's all sort of worked out and excited for the future for the product. So
yeah, so shortly after we, the world, found out that LinkBubble had been sold, you had written a piece and had tweeted about it, and
it was on TMZ as well, I think.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
That would be amazing. Chris Lacey.
Yeah.
No, but so, you know, we didn't really know how to take that because, you know, you see this stuff and either it just goes into a black box and you never really see it again, or the company actually ends up, you know, doing some great things with it. And I think, thankfully, we all can say that whoever these people are, which hopefully eventually we find out,
well, I mean, one of them, Brian Bondi, did a post on his personal website about the most recent LinkBubble update, and so Brian Bondi is one of them, and as I mentioned before, I can't say much, but I wouldn't be saying anything if I wasn't happy with it, or if I felt there was a risk people were, you know, anything untoward was happening or anything like that. But yeah, it's just a matter of the startups in stealth mode, I guess.
Yeah, it makes sense. But yeah, what's been nice is that they have done stuff with it, right? We've seen updates in the Play Store that have fixed some of the longstanding problems and added, you know, a few new features. And that's great to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so yeah, do you just want to talk about like the reaction to that and, you know, how you feel about seeing this progress and it not being under your control?
Sure. So I should also mention after I got back from Google I/O, I definitely, you know, obviously you and I had spent a bunch of time in bars and that sort of stuff, and I'd seen you and Matt Precious using LinkBubble, and at one point we were in a bar and Jason Holmes, another guy you worked with, was using it as well. So I was just surrounded by all these people using LinkBubble, and I just felt, you know, immensely proud, but also overridden with guilt that, oh gosh, you know, this is not as good as it needs to be. You know, it doesn't make any financial sense, you know, considering Action Launch is doing so well, but I'm just going to spend a bit of time cleaning up a few things almost as a goodbye release to LinkBubble. And so I came back and I wrote the theme color feature for LinkBubble, where it takes the, you know, uses the attribute there to extract the color, which Chrome introduced recently, and you know, prettied up the settings for the proper material design guidelines and added icons and fixed a bunch of crash bugs and all sorts of stuff. So, then the LinkBubble discussions sort of started in earnest, and I just thought, okay, well, this would be a good thing where we can, the new company can sort of be responsible for releasing this update. And that's sort of the way it largely worked. But the new company also did some tremendous work. I remember I was explaining to them about the WebView dilemma, and the HTML dropdown, the fact that they didn't work, and I basically, for people that are paying attention, that was fixed in 1.5, but I didn't do it. That was the new owners. They, you know, and I just sort of said, oh, look, you know, don't listen to me. What on earth do I know? You, you know, you've never necessarily done anything. You've never seen this code base before, and you've solved this problem. So they did, you know, tremendous work fixing that. And, in subsequent updates, they've, you know, added the ability to save images to the, you can long press and save an image to the gallery. And I think the file picker works as well using, 4.4's documents API. So they've
And I'd also add they're extremely thorough as far as reading all the Play Store reviews and adding tickets and responding to issues far more than I ever was. So it's been tremendous just to see the fact that the app's gotten better and better and you know, presumably will continue to get better and better going forward. And that definitely doesn't always happen with acquisitions. Like oftentimes, I guess it's very different when people are involved, which wasn't the case here. But often case with such transactions, products that come across are shut down, and that's definitely not been the case with LinkBubble so far. So yeah, it's been terrific.
Yeah, hopefully it's an indicator of great things to come from whoever these people are, other than Brian, but. I guess we'll just have to wait and find out.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so in the deal to ultimately sell LinkBubble, which presumably, you know, ended up taking a couple of weeks, you basically were not acting as kind of yourself, the normal engineer developer working on code, but having to negotiate and be more the executive type and interacting with, you know, the business people from the people that ultimately bought LinkBubble. So what was that like?
It was definitely a far different experience to what I'm used to. Normally my day is pretty clear. You know, I get the kids off to daycare and come home and think about what I'm going to do on the drive home and sit down and do it. It was very, very different negotiating a deal such as this. It was an American company, and so the, there's time zone issues, and I just found myself instinctively, you know, I might roll over in the middle of the night and it might be 2 a.m. and normally I just go straight back to sleep, whereas when this deal's going on, I'm thinking, look, I've got to check my email. If something's come through, then I've got to give myself every chance to reply to it as quickly as possible, because if I don't, then if I don't, you know, have a headspace on how I'm going to deal with this and whether I need to, you know, bring the lawyer in or something like that to answer this one, we could end up losing a day. And that really slows down the whole process. So I had a terrible time sleeping, not for the first time throughout LinkBubble's life, throughout the process. And you know, there was a lot of back and forth and actually coding, you know, anything meaningful at the time was just, I found to be an impossibility. I do remember the last day it sold. My youngest was sick, and I took the kids into daycare, and they said, sorry, you know, this one's sick. We can't, you can't be here today. And I just was out in the car park at this day center, and I just basically, the deal was done, and I just had to, you know, figure out a few tiny little details and sign it. And I'm just in this car park and I just wanted to cry. I'm just like, I just need someone to look after this kid for me for a day. But, so I can sign this deal. It was all too much. Especially considering, you know, I'd do it on my own. I didn't have a mentor and that sort of stuff. So that was, it was definitely an eye-opening experience, and it's very different sort of discussing a deal compared to actually closing one. So, it was an experience I'm glad to have done, but there was definitely no part of me that walked away from it thinking, okay, I want to trade in writing code for being an executive going negotiating the ins and outs of legal contracts. So I'm one and done. I'd sort of be okay with that, at least for a while.
safe to say that at least we know Action Launcher will be developed for a couple of years, since that you don't want to go through that again.
yes, I think that's fair. Although, you know, with I was sort of happy to say, with Action Launcher, I've had various discussions over the years about shipping the phone as you know, preloaded on certain devices from certain manufacturers and that sort of stuff, but it largely comes back to what I was saying before, that it's very different discussing a deal compared to actually closing one. So someone offered me an offer I couldn't refuse for Action Launcher. You know, I think everything in the world has a price, right? But I don't plan on selling it or trying to sell it or anything like that. I continue to enjoy writing it, so I plan to keep doing that. And now with Link Bubble in better hands and in the hands of a team, it's easy for me to focus and on Action Launcher, and that's what I want to do.
So that pretty much wraps up all the things that I had to ask you about. Is there any final thoughts you want to make on Link Bubble before we sign off here?
The only thing I'd say is that I just sort of thank everyone who used the app and provided feedback and certainly who bought it. And I sort of said in my announcement post at the time that I'm more proud of it than anything that I've ever done. And I'm not someone who enjoys talking about themselves, but I feel like for whatever reason I lucked onto something, you know, really unique with Link Bubble, and it's one of those concepts where once you hear it, you're like, oh yeah, of course, you know, why would I want to wait for content to load when I could keep reading my Twitter feed? So I'm very proud of the idea and excited to see it grow for sure going forward.
Yeah. Me too. I'm still remain a loyal user, and I'm out there converting as many people as I can.
Terrific. Okay. So, Jake, thank you so much for occupying my chair in this episode. Hopefully, the audience have enjoyed it. Do you want to let everyone know where people can find you online?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at Jake Wharton, and Google+, Jake Wharton as well.
Jake, thanks again.
Thanks for having me.